Hi everyone, welcome to our town. Thank you for joining us for this episode. As a reminder, you can view any of our episodes on lnnnews.com as well as YouTube. You can listen to any of the Our Town episodes on your favorite podcast playing platform. This, episode 10 of season 2, will be the final episode for season 2. We will be closing out season 2 with this episode. I think 10 is a nice fair number. We'll catch you in a little bit with season 3. But for this week, joining us, Shimmy J, the founder and CEO of Sensible Marketing. Not only did Sensible sponsor season 2, he also took the time to join us for an episode. Shimmy's somebody who grew up right here, Lakewood, New Jersey, so we discussed what it was like growing up in the early 90s. We discussed his very successful shotgun career, and then we discussed his climbing the corporate ladder from the very bottom until finding his marketing agency, which is something that shook the nursing home world, the healthcare industry. We talk about all the lessons he's learned along the way. So this makes a phenomenal episode. Anybody who heard it so far said it was very engaging and interesting, and I'm sure you'll appreciate it as well. In the middle of this episode, you'll hear about Sensible, and also beginning and end. I'm joking, not too much Sensible, but we definitely talk about Sensible. But for now, let me catch you on the other side of this introduction.
You are listening to Our Town, an LNN podcast. Meet the people who have transformed Lakewood from a small town into our town. I am your host, Mayor Dickstein.
Today we would like to thank Shimmy J for coming down to LNN Studios. Welcome to Our Town.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Happy to be here. It's funny because every time I come to Lakewood, I'm like, you know, I'm coming home. This is where we're at, hometown.
Monmouth Medical?
Monmouth Medical, Long Branch, Robbie J. You remember the Jacobuses from Deal? They're like part of the community?
Not familiar.
Oh, they hosted all the Shabbos when people were born on Shabbos.
Oh, cool.
So they would have them for meals and stuff. So I think I was born on a Friday. No, I was born on a Tuesday, actually. But my parents just knew them from, you know, Deal. Anyway, yeah, Monmouth Medical.
So you have good memories?
Great memories. I remember that like yesterday.
I was involved with an adult daycare center. I met a woman who was born there like 100 years ago. It's a really, really old hospital.
It is an old hospital. So, and it was known for a birthing center.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you ever realize, why does everyone go to Monmouth Medical, not in Kimball? Like, we have a hospital right here in Lakewood.
Yeah, I don't know. Good question.
Yeah.
So I know like any crisis, they go to Jersey Shore.
Right,
but whereas typically Monmouth.
I remember a couple of years ago, a few developers were looking to do a specific birthing center here off the Garden State, like really close to Lakewood. I don't know whatever happened to it, but...
It would make sense.
It would make so much sense. Everyone's schlepping 20, 25 minutes. If you could do it a little closer, and you have the population.
I wonder if you accumulate a list of how many things like this in Lakewood that just like... They just don't add up. Like, why don't we just...
A lot of business to be had.
That's great. So, Lakewood Cheder?
No, I was actually the third class of Yeshiva Katana.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Where was it back then?
Yeshiva Katana was on 2nd Street. Actually, it was on between 2nd and 3rd Street on Lexington. That's where the original building was. My pre-1A was on... I think 4th between Forest and Lakewood Avenue.
Hang on. You're from Lakewood. You said P1A. Now, I'm from Muncie. We say P1A. Here, they say primary.
Primary, yeah.
So
primary.
I'm wondering if they used to say P1A here in Lakewood too.
No, we call it primary. We call it primary. Yeah, okay. We call it primary. I say P1A because it's over 30 years ago. Yeah.
You got it, yeah. I thought maybe at some point it switched. Oh,
no,
cool.
No, but yeah, primary, we were on 4th between Forest and Lakewood Avenue. Yeah.
It was a brand new school,
I guess. It was brand new. Right. It was third year. We were the chazaka year. We always said, like, we made a chal. Because, you know, we were the third class. We gave the chazaka. Reb Mendel Rabinowitz, Zecher Tzadok Levracha. He was a powerhouse then. It was great. Yeah, it was great. Yeshiva Katana was a good up. It was good. Some good times.
Nice. What are your first memories of, like, restaurants, eateries here in Lakewood?
That's a great question. I want to say the first pizza spot was behind Pizza Plus. There was a little restaurant, a little pizza place where you would come. You couldn't sit there. You just get pizza and then go. I think there were maybe like three or four of those, like, what are those chairs called? Like high top chairs? Barstool type of chairs that you would sit there, but you were like looked at as like, oh, you're a bum. You sat there. And then R&S, of course. The R&S was legendary.
People would go for like supper, like waiting for the golf fight.
R&S was a spot people would go like for occasions, like for a birthday. If you like made a CM on something, like my father would take us as like a treat. Like R&S was the spot, yeah.
So you think Flaffle and Chips was later?
Flaffle and Chips came a little later, yeah. I would say Flaffle and Chips was a couple years after that. But when me growing up, and I'm talking about like in the early 90s, it was R&S and that pizza place. I think it was called Pizza Plus, actually. Or maybe something else. I don't have to get my friends from my sports rant to come. I have a sports rant with all old school Lakewood guys. Like old school. Zvi Reich, Fishel Goldberg. Real old school Lakewood boys. They would know.
We should do a big trivia.
Lakewood trivia?
With all the old Lakewood.
Yeah, it would be great. So
you remember a time when people would like go to Brooklyn to buy their hats and their suits?
100%. My bar mitzvah, we went to Bancroft in Brooklyn. We went to the Hat Box. There was no Hat Box in Lakewood. I remember when the Hat Box came to Lakewood originally on County Line.
Yeah, I remember they were first, I believe, in the Capitol Hotel.
Yes. Do you remember that? Yes, yes. Downstairs in the Capitol near the ice cream store. Yes, yes, yes. Oh, wow. Yeah, that was good. Wow. But yeah, I remember as a bar mitzvah boy, we went to, it was either Kova or Bancroft. Like Kova was for like the more yeshivish, weekday roach.
Remember those Huckles?
Huckles and roach. And then like if you know, you had a Balabatish family, you go to Bancroft, get a Triumfo.
Right. The brims were like
oh my
cowboy
God.
Hats. That's great. Where'd you go for high school?
So I went to Yeshiva Ketana through elementary, and then they started Masifta, Keren Haterah. So I went to Keren Haterah for ninth grade, had Rabbi Feinroth. It was actually really nice. I learned Bava Metzia, so I really got some good introduction to Nash Muzikin and learning, you know, with Lamdus and things. It was really nice. Started off in Kal Chasidim on Oak Knoll for Elsman. Then we moved... Or maybe we started off in 2nd Street for Elsman, and then we moved to Oak Knoll. But it was exciting. You know, we used to ride our bike to school. To Yeshiva was 9th grade. But then I went to Long Beach after 9th grade. So I kind of left Lakewood.
That's when you left Lakewood.
Yeah.
And you stayed there for Resurgence?
I was in Long Beach for 9th grade. From 10th grade through the whole thing. Masifta, Beis Medrash, and then I went to Eretz Yisrael to Rechemi Kaplan.
And BMG.
Then Simcha Maimon for a couple of years. I got married, went to Kailo there, and then moved back to BMG.
So when BMG I was theater. In BMG, you were like the hottest shatchan in Lakewood.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm very curious because it's on my bucket list still to make one shidduch. I used to work for PCS. I used to find guys' jobs. Yeah. So they have a whole bunch of those job shidduchim.
By the way, job shidduchim is I would say, it's just as big as a mitzvah as making a real shidduch.
But there's no shver, there's no shvigur.
True, but you have a boss.
Yeah.
You have co-workers.
They get salaries and stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, they say if you make 3 shidduchim, you go straight to Gan Eden.
Oh, yeah.
I think if you make 5 business shidduchim, you should go straight to Gan Eden.
Cha-ching.
Yeah. That's what I said. 5. But they have to last.
Your first shidduch, how did you get involved in that?
So my first shidduch, this is a great question, by the way. I never sat down to have this conversation ever, so this is actually cool. My first shidduch, I was living in Eretz Yisrael, and my sister had a friend, and I had a friend, and I just set my sister's friend and my friend up.
They didn't ask, like, you know, you're a young guy, we want a professional shadchan or something?
I think my mother probably took over the actual back and forth, but that was my first idea. Like I had an idea, it was a good idea, and I you know gave it over to my mother. She did the back and forth.
So that, was that the first shidduch you read?
That was the first shidduch that I read.
And they got engaged.
Got engaged. They're married. That's amazing.
Yeah, you felt amazing.
6, 7. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you get the taste of like success of like doing a shidduch that actually works, and they get married, you're like, oh wow, I could do this. I have good ideas. I understand people. I really could do this.
So you went from there. Number two.
So that was one. Then I did another one, and I think the first couple, my mother was doing the back and forth. And then once I came back to Lakewood. I really took off because I'm like in BMG, you're at a Chavrusa Talmud, you're meeting so many different guys. And my sister, I had three sisters. They were all like, you know, of age that their friends were in Shidduchim. So it kind of, you know, was an easy, you know, match, you know, family made sense. The boy made sense. The girl made sense. And it really just took off from there. I did about, I think it was 36 Shidduchim closed, married in about a year and a half.
Wow, that's why you're there, see?
Yeah.
That means that like every month you're popping a few. That's why you're
Hadashah. Yeah, we did some nice shidduchim also, you know, good families.
That's, yeah. So any tips for myself or anyone out there who's looking to go become a... I need just one. My bucket tip, list my is tip one. Is
if you don't need to do shidduchim, don't do it. It's just, it's a very hard, it's a hard business. I shouldn't call it business, but it's a hard thing to do. It's really hard. It's a lot of hours. You're talking to people, a lot of like therapy, psychology, and I'm sure it's a lot harder now. This is before pre-WhatsApp days. This was like, you know, BBM Messenger. it was just like a lot of time spent on it. It was a lot of hours. And you know, for making 36 shidduchim, you had to set up probably 150, 200 dates.
Every night you had a whole bunch of dates going on.
Yeah, I would have 3-4 dates a night.
That's amazing.
It was a good feeling. Like, it was a lot of good feeling of doing it. You know, you feel, I felt successful. I felt good. And I think this, you know, doing shidduchim back 12, 13, 14 years ago, I would say was the blueprint for my success in business and life later on. 100%.
That's cool.
Yeah. I learned at a young age how to talk to people, how to interact with people and how to kind of, you know, sell. A shidduch, selling a shidduch is really sales. You're selling people. And my business today is selling people to go and have a good end of their life living in a nursing home. So it's kind of both selling people, which is sounds weird to say, but that's what we call it, marketing, not sales.
Right. Did you ask like other shadchanim for help when...
So, no, I actually just started doing it myself without...
Because how do you know when it's a real concern or just like, don't worry, you're just nervous. Everyone goes through this.
I think like most of my shidduchim that I set up were pretty smooth sailing. And if it was a real concern, we would get a Rebbe involved. We would get, you know, parents would speak to the Rabbanim and their Ravs.
How much pushing did you do? Second day, they're like, oh, I don't feel it. You're like, dude, go out again. Like,
I never really pushed. Like, mm-hmm. I knew from the get go if it worked.
Whatever out. That is, that's what I need.
You got a good feeling. You got a good feeling. You got a good feeling.
That's great.
It was. And I think I was one of the first shadchanim that I would say. So in those days, it was Shlomo Lewinstein, it was Meir Levy. Those were the two big guns. And then you had Freddie Friedman starting, PD Roth starting, myself, Saw the Cats. There were like a few young guys who started doing it. My thing was that I got close to the guys. Like I really was talking to them. We sat and schmoozed and understood what they wanted. So I think I had a good feel for the, you know, type of person they were looking for, type of girl they were looking for. So
that means you stuck to guys like yourself. You didn't do like, I don't know, very yeshivish or...
Not really. I was sticking to like my type, and I was actually pretty yeshivish back then.
I guess I was too.
Yeah, I was saying I'm just a Long Beach from Chemi Kaplan guy.
I know, like to us, you know, maybe to the outside person, it's all the same. But like within BMG and within Shidduchim world, there's like learning, working.
Right. Yeah, no. I was definitely more learning. You know, three steps away from going to work. I guess I was more into that crowd. You know, 3 to 5 year learners, I guess we called it back then.
So you met girls from out of town? Was it a thing then, like girls from out of town were having a harder time? I'm assuming it was.
Yes.
And they come knocking at your door? Like.
So I got a lot of calls from mothers. They would call and they would you know, want me to come meet their daughters. I usually did it in a big setting where there was other shatchanim that were there. So we would go to Brooklyn, three different shatchanim, and meet in like a shul basement. And, you know, just literally, it was probably the hardest thing. You would meet mothers and daughters back to back, and you would meet like 20 mothers and daughters in a 2-hour span. And you're like, have to eat, think of something. You want to give them something. You don't want to just say, hi, how are you? And nice to meet you and here, send me your resume. You want to really try to leave them with two or three ideas.
Wow.
So you're sitting there meeting 20 mothers and daughters and giving out, you know, literally 60 names of boys and then trying to follow up and set them up. It was difficult. Yeah.
Because you probably don't even remember who's who. Like the mother calls you and you're trying to figure out. Like.
Right. No, so I think one of my strengths in life is just actually remembering people, faces, and names. Cool. That's one of my strengths is like a Zikaran. You know, I remember people. So
that's part of this.
Yeah, it's part of this. Yeah. So I did remember a lot of the people, but it was just hard. It's like a 2 hours, 3 hours of just real grueling, you know, mentally knowing what's going on, remembering and making everyone feel special and good. You don't want someone coming and, you know, whether they you know, for some reason they have some baggage or something's off, and you know that there's not a lot of shidduchim for them, and you have to still make them feel good. You don't want to make someone feel not good about themselves.
As a bachur, I remember going to such an event, and it was in Madison Title. I don't know if you were there or not. There was like a room of like male shadchanim and then female shadchanim. And like I walk into the one with the guys, and there's like sushi flying, everyone's pizza on the table. Like, what are you looking for? Camp, you know? And I went to the room with the females, with the woman. They were like just like you hear like quiet, like pencil writing. They're all writing, taking notes, you know, asking a question, taking notes. I remember the stark difference. It was very funny.
Yeah, definitely.
Any interesting stories of like people being unappreciative, or the people who like go out on a couple of dates show their appreciation to you?
So sure. I think that I never dealt with an unappreciative, or I just don't remember it. But I do remember I set up this girl from Lakewood, and they went out, I think, 3-4 times. And the parents sent like, I think it was like a $300 like check in the mail, and then like a flowers and fruit for Shabbos. It was like so thoughtful. Like, you know, at the end of the day, when you're setting up a shidduch, you're really putting in time, effort, energy. And if it doesn't work out, a little akar satayv goes a long way. That I remember. There were some really nice people that I think, you know, did a lot of, you know, appreciation. Like even just a phone call after thanking the next day, you know, it didn't work out. You know, yeah. But that, I will never forget that $300 check, you know?
Right. I have to give a shout out now for my uncle and aunt's organization, 10K Bata Yisrael.
10K Bata Yisrael? No, what is that?
My cousin was engaged to a Kaplan girl. You've heard the story? And then they were both killed in a car accident.
Sure. Yeah. Levin's younger brother. Yeah. Sure.
So they have now an organization just trying to promote people to Red Shidduchim.
Oh, really? So,
that's the Yisrael Levins, about the Yisrael, and like, you know, they were engaged at the time.
Yeah, sure. We'll never forget it. On the 878, on the way into Farakway, the drunk driver, sure. Ellie Levin has a song, Afi Kaiman, about this. Sure.
Yes.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
So everyone go out there and read Shidduchim.
Yes, I would say go out and read Shidduchim. People ask me all the time, will you ever go back into Shidduchim? And I'm like, no, I won't go back into Shidduchim. But if I have an idea, I will give it over to, you know, Aaron Lashinsky or someone who I know read Shidduchim. So I will tell everyone to go out and read Shidduchim. It was a good run.
Right. Anyways, I think now AI will probably take over Shadchanim. So it's your last chance to read Shidduchim.
Yes.
So what was your first job?
My first job was, I'm trying to remember if it was, yes. So my first job was at Westmark Realty for David Stanger and Mike Tab. So I went there doing short sales. So I was like learning half a day and working half a day. And they, like, it was a very nice environment. They could come in for a couple hours, make some phone calls. And those, it was 2000, I think 11, 12. It was right after the housing crisis. So there was a lot of short sales going on. And I would reach out to, you know, people around all over Jersey to see if they want to help with their house doing a short sale.
It's mainly cold calls.
It was straight up cold calls.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was great. It was a good introduction to the business world.
Did you also see like great success right away? Like the
No. I mean, I got a lot of listings, but closing the deals were much harder, and it was a struggle. I would say I did it for about a year. I got to say big shout out to David Stanger and Westmark Realty for. By the way, it's Westmark with a Q, but they gave me a shot. David Stanger sold me in Starbucks one day, and he's like, "You got to come here and work with us." So. That was really nice. And then after that, I went to work for a company called PetAssure. It was a pet insurance company. I lasted about 7 work days.
What was the job there?
This job was calling veterinarians around the country to see if they want to sign up with us for our pet insurance company.
That's great.
And I'm sitting there from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. cold calling people, like telemarketing. Ooh, not for me.
Yeah.
That was probably one of the hardest 10 days of my life.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that was a struggle. And then I went to work for Bernard Worman, another Lakewood legend.
For sure.
Pish Posh Baby.
Okay. Now I know it was modular closets, but you're modular back closets, in the day.
Yes, Pish Posh Baby. And that was also tremendous learning experience. Working there. And, you know, literally 9 hours a day, some 12 hours a day, just pounding the phone, doing sales, you know, getting a paycheck that barely covered, you know, living expenses. So it was a rough time.
Wow. Yeah, just to pick up the phone, make the next call again and again.
Yeah, over and over again. Yeah, it was definitely a good learning experience.
What was next?
Next, we went out into...
I'm just waiting for Sensible. Coming up here. You keep like making a left, making a right.
Listen, so people, it's interesting because people don't realize, like, you know, getting to a place where you could find success doesn't just happen overnight, you know, especially right. When you come from a regular background. No one helped you and you just really went out there yourself. I got to give my father a big shout out here because he... was always helping me out through my younger years. And then when I went into the workforce, he's like, I'm done. I'm not, no more. You're on your own. And it was a really good thing because the fact that I had to go out and figure it out on my own, you know, got me to where I was. So at that time I went to Brooklyn to a company called Centers, Amazing Home Care. It was a home care company. And they gave me a shot to do sales also.
So it's not Rosenberg Center.
It is, Kenny Rosenberg, yeah.
Okay, so it's in the Bronx?
It was in the Bronx. So I Moshe Edelman gave me the job. I went for an interview right away, you know, hired me. And I worked there for 6 months.
Cold calling?
No, so this was more sales in person, boots on the ground. Going around to doctor's offices, see if they want to...
offer home care services to their patients,
yeah. Right. And I had a great 6 months, and I was so excited that I'm doing so well. I'm like, could I have a raise? And they were like, let's think about it. No.
That's great.
And they said, no. They didn't give me the raise. So at the time...
it wasn't like a commission-based...
No, it was a salary. And there were commissions, but hitting the commissions wasn't like... crazy.
The job's also hard because you're kind of asking like the doctors for a favor to refer you. Like, why? What does he have in? Like, what does he gain from referring you?
Yeah, but he's sending it somewhere.
Right.
So if you're good at what you do, you should be the one they should be sending to. So it wasn't such a hard sell. I don't think it was such a hard sell.
And you lived in Lakewood at that point, so you were driving in.
Lakewood. I was driving in. I was staying at my aunt and uncle a couple days a week. Yeah. It was definitely a lot of driving and traveling.
This is the hustle no one sees, okay.
Yeah, 100%. No one knew what was going on. Then I was just doing my thing, just trying to, you know, support my family. And
you ever thought about going back into Shidduchim? Like,
no.
At the time, you're still doing Shidduchim?
No. Yeah. Once I left the Shidduch scene...
Also could be a lot of work.
I was out. Right. I wasn't going back into it. But I did make money doing Shidduchim.
Right.
I did make money. I actually did really well.
That's why. So yeah, if you're like pounding the pavement, you're like, it's just... write a shidduch and make a couple grand.
Yeah. No, I was done. That was in the past. So, and then after the home care company, when I went for the raise, they didn't want to give it to me. An opportunity came up in the nursing home space. And this is, I actually say this over all the time. Big shout out to Abe Krause, Ellie Frankel. They gave me a shot Newark Extended Care in Newark, New Jersey. I had two women who were my officially like, they were doing this for 30 years. And I came in to be their boss. And I knew nothing about the nursing home industry, like nothing. And I walked in there. I remember like picking up my phone, Googling what's short-term care, what's long-term care, what's a referral. And I literally faked it till I made it. Like I literally, for weeks, I was just like, you know.
You remind me of Frank Abagnale, Catch Me If You Can. You have to walk in this if you're the boss. Right.
Literally, great. Literally. It was great. It was a good experience. But I really learned the business during those 6 months. Like I learned what it means to go into a hospital, what it means to, you know, patient care, caring about patients, and that whole the whole nursing home game. I really picked it up in 6 months.
So they were, I'm not that familiar, they were going to hospitals and filling up beds? And
that was my job. My job was to go into the nursing home. They owned the nursing home, and my job was to go and fill the beds. That's what a marketing a liaison means in the nursing home space. You go into the hospitals, and you find patients that want to come to your nursing home.
So each nursing home has a couple of hospitals in the area, and that's the extent of the marketing, right, is done in those hospitals.
Yeah, yeah.
So what does it mean when people say, like, now it's a very rough time, to very hard to fill beds in nursing homes, if, like, we always have seniors, right?
That's a great question.
Unless it's a senior crisis, like we have a shidduch crisis.
No, there's never a senior crisis. People are always getting old. It usually means that there's times of year where patients are, you know, not getting as sick. Summertime is less illnesses, not getting catching colds or going to the hospitals for procedures. Doctors are away on vacation and they're not doing heart surgeries or certain surgeries. They're just not doing it. So it could be a slower time. Right. That's usually what that means.
That'd be for a short-term care.
Yeah, yeah. This is for short-term care, subacute, right. Yeah.
But long-term care, people are always getting old.
So. Yeah, long-term care, there's always patients out. There's always patients that are in need. And I just want to be clear, like, the business is not, like, trying to find people that are, like, to get people sick. It's the business is people that are sick and they have a need to be cared for. That's the business, to care for these patients.
So how did you spend your days back in the beginning in Newark?
I would wake up in the morning, drive to Newark, and go to the facility, pick up some tchotchkes, some, you know, marketing materials, and go pound the hospitals. So I would hit up 5-6 hospitals a day.
Oh, wow.
And do rounds and meet with the discharge planners to see if they need help placing their patients. And I think the key to the success was really being there for the hospitals to help them with their discharge planning. A lot of these social workers, their job is to find placement, a safe discharge for these patients. Some patients have real illnesses that they need real care for, and I would help them with that.
Was it hard to reach the social workers within the hospital?
You just walk in? There was a lot of maneuvering. You know, I always say you want to know the security people first. Once you get to know the security guys, you buy them coffee, give them some donuts, become their friends, then you're in. And then once you're in the hospital, you just want to make sure that you're going to see the right people and there for a reason.
So it's a whole process until you make relationships with everybody.
It's all about relationships.
Right. Wow. So how long did it take you to start feeling successful?
I think after I got that job in Newark, I think it was doubled my salary from what I was doing at the home care. So I was feeling pretty good then. But one day, and I said this video last week, I did a video about this, I got fired. One day to the next, I got a call from the owner, you know, start looking for a new job. And I gotta give them credit. They actually kept me on payroll for like three more weeks until I found the job. But they fired me. It was a pretty rough time that I got fired because I was feeling good about myself. I was finally like, I thought I was like, you know, on top of the world making, you know.
Looking back, do you see why they had to let you go?
No. It was a reason that I think it was a miscommunication. I think that, you know, the owners thought that I was not doing what I should have been doing, and I really was. But we laugh about it till today. I'm good friends with the owners now, and he always tells me, you should thank me for firing you, because if I didn't fire you, you wouldn't be where you are today. And he has a point.
Right.
And he was very mental for keeping me on, so thank you, Abe.
I just wanted to go out. He wouldn't have had a conversation. If he wants you to do this, did he let you know?
No, it was the type of thing where he felt that it wasn't going to work out, and it was time for me to move on.
Did you know other from people in the marketing space, health and healthcare, at that time?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. My uncle was in this space. He still is. So my uncle actually called me up, and he gave me an idea to go work with Nathan Freund from Ditmas Park at the time. And Nathan Freund brought me under his wing, gave me actually even more money with a sign-in bonus. And that's when I really started feeling the success. I go into Brooklyn, took all my knowledge from Newark. And in Brooklyn, it was a lot easier. There was so many more people, so much more to succeed in.
The population.
Population was dense, and there was a lot more people to find to go into the nursing homes.
And then Sensible?
So during that time at Ditmas Park, Nathan showed me, he's like, we have this one building. You're in the hospitals. There's so many patients that need help. Why don't you send them to the Bronx, the psych patients or harder to place patients? And that's how I started this company, Sensible, because I was helping the hospitals with their hard discharges and hard to place patients. And that's how Sensible was created.
So that way you're a one-stop shop for the social worker where you can help with older
exactly,
patients.
Exactly.
So real benefit.
You're a lamdin there. You have a valkishin.
That's
not cool. That means you're not a lamdin. It just means that, small mazel.
So that's really all you, though. So how do you expand that?
So that was the idea where I started training young guys and girls under me to teach them how to do what I do and place them in different nursing homes. And then I would have the nursing home take the take on that salary, and I would take my piece on top.
So you could have two competing nursing homes as clients?
Great question. And I always tell people, we will not take on a competing facility. So if it's in the same, demographic, or they're feeding from the same hospital, the way we call it, like if their hospitals are overlapping, we won't take that client on for our main services. I'll do a virtual tour for them. I'll do other services for them.
Just a quick break for a quick word from our sponsors, Sensible Marketing. If you're a operator, administrator, marketer, owner of any healthcare facility and you're looking to fill your beds, then give Sensible a call. They know how to do it. They've been doing it for many years. They know what needs to be done. So give them a call and you'll be in good hands. Back to the episode.
That creates a nice rush. I would think that there's going to have to get you first in the area or else they lose out.
Right? Yes, 100%.
So how wide is your net?
We're in about 29, 30 states now. We came out with a bunch of new products over the years. So after I left Ditmas Park and I went in full on Sensible, I hired, actually partnered up with this guy, Ron, who really helped take on a lot of new business. Ron's now my partner now for about 8 years. Great guy. And thank you, Ron, for everything. And then I hired a guy, Jeremy
Freeman. You want to just give all your shout-outs now? I'm joking.
As it comes. Yeah. Jeremy Freedman then came on. Yitzhak Freedman, great guy. And he really helped develop a lot of the, for me, I was a one-man show. So I was only able to do, let's say, 10 homes or 15 homes. But once I hired Jeremy and Ron came on board, we were able to expand and really go into other states. And then Abe Cohn came on for 2 years, helped develop a new program. And we wish him all the best. He moved on, but he really helped us with a few things. So thank you, Abe. And then, thank God. We have a lot of good guys that are on our team. I hired a bunch of regionals over the years. And
very cool.
Thank God, yeah.
Was this a novelty, like a chiddush, the way you're doing it?
100%. Yeah. It's a niche company that focuses on a third-party marketing. Most nursing homes do this on their own. We came up and then we said, you're an owner or an operator. You have a lot of time to focus on the Department of Health, on Medicare, on the care. Let us take care of your marketing.
I think so, because there's so many other departments that they outsource.
Exactly.
Housekeeping and dietary and
billing, yeah, back office.
Exactly.
So, yeah, this should be...
I'm sure you have some shout-outs for back office to go for, Jimmy.
I'm not giving anybody a shout-out.
Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to the people that helped grow what we were growing. So, Baruch Hashem. I got to give a shout out to Ellie Goldbaum from FHS. Ellie Goldbaum actually was one of my first big accounts that he brought on CFW Group, and we did some good things together. And Ellie Goldbaum has just been a mentor of mine from way back. So shout out to Ellie Goldbaum. And then another big account from that's been with us from the beginning is Eric Mandel from OptimaCare. Really, that the OptimaCare is a growing company, and we've been together for about 7 years now. And Eric's just a phenomenal guy. Still a high, does his thing. So yeah, thank you, Eric, for everything.
So let's play this out because it feels good. If I were to own a whole bunch of nursing homes,
if you were to own a whole bunch of nursing homes,
and I would hire Sensible. So if they're not filling beds, that's your issue.
Great question. Depends what you hired us for. So we have different products. So if you hired us for boots on the ground, which means that the marketer is our marketer, yes. If census isn't going up, it's our problem because it's our marketer. But if you hired us for consulting, which we're using your team and we're doing all the work and we're doing the reporting and we're doing everything we should do, and census is not going up, it's your problem, or it's the marketer's problem, or this is an issue with something else.
That's I think that's rough to guarantee.
We never
it could
get
be the neighborhood
never,
or the population or, as you say, time of year. So how do you do
we
that?
We never guarantee results. I'll never say that we guarantee results. If someone tells you we will guarantee you results in this business, they're lying to you. We're doing something illegal. So,
I'm assuming you have some tips and tricks that other people don't.
Sure, we have some tips and tricks. Got to pay to play.
Right.
Listen, again, there's no magic sauce. No magic sauce.
What was it like from a CEO perspective, building out a company? I don't know if you have like an HR department and the whole thing. Like,
yeah, we have. We have a whole back office. Baruch Hashem, we have a good team.
So where'd you learn that?
I think it just came naturally. A lot of these things, you know, once I was out there in the world a little bit, again, like I said, the Shidduchim scene was definitely a place where I learned. I interacted with a lot of Baal Batim, a lot of different type of people. And, you know, navigating those relationships definitely helps for going out into the workforce.
So do you stay within the firm healthcare world, or do you expand past that?
No, we're not specific. Yeah. I would say like a big percentage of the healthcare owners are from Yidden. So I think we... By default, a lot of our clients are from, but we have some not from and some not Jewish clients as well.
Is it like, you know, when there's something new, when there's a chiddush there and needs like education, did you have at least in the beginning, now people know of Sensible, did you have a hard time selling people on the idea of outsourcing their marketing?
So we definitely have a little bit more of a challenge. That people who don't know exactly what we do. That's the challenge. People don't know what we do. People know Sensible as a fun, exciting, they're having good times. There's a lot of buzz around our extracurricular activities. But when people hear Sensible and really understand it, we have a waiting list actually for clients. We literally don't even have enough manpower right now to, you know, go and open all these accounts. Because once you hear what we do and really understand it, it's a no-brainer. I mean, if you have a facility out in Texas and you have no real oversight and you're an operator here living in Lakewood, you wouldn't want to have eyes and ears on the ground for a couple of $1,000 a month that will literally pay for itself by helping grow your census.
Right.
It's a no-brainer.
So you do a lot of traveling?
So my guys travel a lot. We have team out in Virginia today. We have a team out in, you know, different states. Yeah, we have a lot of guys and girls out and about.
What are you looking for when you're hiring a marketer?
I'm looking for loyalty. I like loyal people that come on board, see our vision, and want to grow with us. Anyone who came on board, is most of our people stay with us for the long haul, and everyone has the opportunity to grow.
So I don't know if loyalty is a skill set. I'm not sure. But what skill set are you
looking
for?
I'm looking for people that are polished, they could speak well, they have sales skills, they have, you know, interpersonal relationship skills. I would, that would skill set, interpersonal relationship. They could talk to people, they carry conversation. You're meeting so many different characters when you're out and about.
Do you find that it's easier if you hire someone from within the community to, you know, I don't know, if you're hiring someone...
Like a from... Yeah.
If you're hiring someone in Newark, so get someone from within Newark who just knows the ins and outs of it. And
yeah, there's definitely a benefit of hiring people from within a certain community and a demographic. Like, we're in Jersey City. We try to find, you know, Latino individuals because there's a big Latino neighborhood there. We have Asian population in Bensonhurst, New York. We try to find Asian, you know, population. So there is definitely something to that. But again, you know, it's really, you know, finding people that want to really go out and hustle and work hard. Because at the end of the day, you know, if you come and hire someone who's from that demographic, but they're not working hard, we end up with nothing.
So do you feel that you can take, say, I don't know, your best guy and put him in any environment and he'll be successful?
100%, yes, yes. Because I look at myself, I could go anywhere and be successful. And my people are just, I tried to make clones of me. That was the whole concept of Sensible, to bring guys and girls to do what I do and just, right, you know, multiply.
Oh, wow. So I guess a lot of it's with your willpower.
Yeah. Yeah, willpower, a lot of willpower, a lot of confidence.
And confidence. Nice. When first opening Sensible, was that the only choice as a name, or did you have other options?
So that's a great question, and that, you know, a lot of times people ask me, like, where did you come up with the name? And I remember I was on a plane flying to, I think, Ohio, and I'm like going, I had in my notes on my iPhone, I would like write down my ideas. I still remember 2-3 years before I opened Sensible, I would write down the ideas of what I want to do and how I want to create this company. And the first name that came to my mind was Sensible. Why? Because it sounds very cheesy, but if you think about it, census is spelled with a C, census. If you take the word sensible, it's the word census is in there, and you could do so many things with the word sensible. It's a sensible company to hire. It makes sense.
Cents as in dollar and cents.
Dollars and cents, and, right, yes, yes. And it goes with census. So it was like cheesy, but almost like brilliant. And right, it was the first name that I came up
this
with.
This is before going into Gamachius.
Way before the Gamachius. Sensible, yeah. So really, it was the first name. First name, and usually my first name that I come up with is a banger, and it usually sticks. I have a few other companies that I don't like to talk about their names and about what they do because it's just, you know, try to keep you know, low key on those companies. I have partners and other things. So, but all the names I come up with, that's my thing. I love coming up with names of companies and logos. Those are like my two specialty things.
Any advice for the I don't know, the guy in Kailal who's finishing Shunri Shaina and thinking about going out to work and starting a company?
I love those guys, by the way. Usually a guy who gets married and wants to go out to work and open his own company, they're entrepreneur-y type of guys. And they are usually hungry. And my advice is go with your heart. Like, just go with your gut. And if you have an idea, run with it. If you need an investor, take an investor. If you need to take a loan out, take a loan out if you have a plan. Don't take a loan if you have no plan. But go with your heart and run with it. You know, any successful billionaire, like Michael Rubin from Fanatics, they all took risks and jumped into it. You got to be a Nachshon Benayim Nadav. You can't be successful without taking a risk.
Do you know people who've taken the risk and have not succeeded?
Sure. There's hundreds of people all that right, took risks and didn't succeed. But so,
yeah.
I heard from a smart guy once, if you don't know, if you don't ask, you'll never know. If you don't ask, you'll never know. If you don't try it, you'll never know. Right. If you're scared and you're not going to take that risk, so you're going to stay back and never find out. At least if you tried it and took the risk, you'll find out either way. But there's a chance you're going to succeed. And if you're desperate and you're persistent, you will succeed.
Regarding your willpower, once you started Sensible, I'm sure that with your times, you're like, that's it, I can't. Not happening. Was it just like crazy growth from day one.
So there was a lot of growth from day one. There was a hard time when COVID hit. And when COVID hit, I was panicking because our whole business was going into the hospitals. Right. And all of a sudden, hospitals are closed off.
Right.
So there was like a good 2 weeks of panic mode. And we got together in the office. I remember it was quiet. The streets were empty. And we just got into the office. Actually, I was in the office, maybe one other guy. And we had a phone conference call with all the team. And we said, we're going to pivot. And we pivoted to doing virtual rounding, where we would make phone calls to the hospitals. And we stood outside the hospitals giving out T-shirts, inspiring the nurses, inspiring the people on the front lines. And we did giveaways. We brought the Chickies truck from Teaneck to the hospitals. We brought smoothies, and we really just blew. Our whole pivot was to do good and give back to the hospitals during COVID. And that tripled our business.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
So basically it was like nurse appreciation.
Yeah. And then everyone copied us and did the T-shirts, but we were the first to do that.
But were they giving you, were you actively placing people in nursing homes?
Were they giving you names? Sure. Yeah. During COVID, we tripled our business because there were so many more people. People died during COVID, and the nursing homes were empty. So people needed us more than ever. And we were pivoting and figuring out ways to, you know, we did this whole thing, virtual video tours, sensible virtual video tours, CVVT. And we would literally, I did 100 videos in about 9 months. Because everyone now needed a way to showcase their facility. People couldn't come do regular tours like before COVID. So we just were expanding and growing. And, you know, that was the, but that was the hard, you asked the question, like, was there a hard, that was the hardest scare. But Baruch Hashem, from the Tzara came the Yeshua.
Read the Tzara, yes. I mean, the concept of video tours were there.
The concept was there, but people weren't pushing it as much. And it was more, people were doing more like promotional music videos. Like they were like dancing in the nursing home. And like it was just, there was no like, what was, okay, cool. But like we did a specific showcasing the facility like you were doing a walkthrough tour. Nice. With someone talking. It was, you know, so yeah, the concept was there, but we really perfected it.
Let's talk about your social media a little bit.
Sure.
I know you have a very, you know, big net, wide range, lots of people. When did that start?
So I actually started WhatsApp statusing, I would say, over 10 years ago. Like, I feel like I was like the first guy on status. I remember like posting a status and getting 12 views because no one else had WhatsApp. Right. Like I had a lot of contacts. I always had a lot of contacts on my phone from Shidduchim days.
Right.
And from like, I just always had a lot of contacts.
Yeah.
And I would meet people and I would just, this is before knowing that your contacts are going to be valuable. I always had a lot of contacts on my phone and I'm never shy to ask someone for their number, or if someone asks me for their number, I'm always happy to share it. So yeah, about 10 years ago I started with the WhatsApp and I always try to keep it interesting, not to overdo it. You know, there's a chachma to posting statuses. People that flood it and just keep posting just unlimited stuff, get people don't want to see too much, but you also want to keep it content coming. So you have to, it's an interesting balance.
So you started with WhatsApp.
So I started with WhatsApp. At the same time, I had Instagram. When LinkedIn first started, people were like, what's this LinkedIn? And I got on LinkedIn pretty early. And I always just put out interesting content, engaging content, trying to get people to want to respond.
What was your goal?
My goals was to get my name out there. I always thought, I believe all PR is good PR. Mm-hmm. So if I put out sensible marketing, even if it has nothing to do with nursing homes, but the word sensible is in there, hashtag sensible, it's going to stick and people are going to know the name. And once you have brand recognition, when people want to build their senses, the first thing they think about is sensible. That was the goal. And I think we did a pretty good job with that. You know, you want to be like the Amazon of whatever you do.
Did you see other companies who came into your space? After you started.
Few people have tried. It's a very difficult business to really penetrate. And it's just a hard thing to sell. So people tried. And I actually like when people try. And if there's another company that's similar to us, call it a vote. I think there's a big need for what we do. And the more people doing it, legitimizes it even more.
So saying that the social media is helpful for your company or
so
spread sensible?
Social media is for brand recognition. There's not a lot of ROI comes from actually the name being out there, meaning people know our name, but like, I don't know. It's hard to know if sales actually translates into sales.
You ever met people now? Do you meet people now who don't know of your company, or is it like just so famous?
Either they say they don't, but they really deep down they do.
Yeah, because I'm not really in healthcare, and I know sensible.
Right. Yeah. So usually in the community, like in the from community, people know. I mean, most it's hard. If you don't, you're living under a rock, because we do. And we did. We sponsor like everything. Like we sponsor the LBA. We sponsor Olam Chesed. Matt Dub did a video. We sponsored. We sponsor a lot of things. We do a lot of, you know, we just did now, we're doing a room for, what's that organization? LIPA, Misameach. So we're donating their jungle gym. Like, we're doing a lot of things. So, you know, we have our merch, Good Times merch. It's all over. So if you don't know it, you're living under a rock.
What's your mindset when someone comes to you and asks you to sponsor something? Like, seems like, I would think, like, stay within healthcare and, you know, sponsor healthcare-related items, but it seems like you don't. Is there any thought process on what to support and what not to?
So that's a great question. In the beginning, it was just about brand recognition. I wanted my name out there. So I would sponsor anything that a nursing home owner might look at. And if he looks at it and he says, oh, Sensible's giving back, it's a very good feel that people want to work with people that give back. It brings a certain way of, oh, he's doing good. Someone who does good is going to get good. We want to be part of that. And it's a way of like reeling people into the goodness and the positivity and all that stuff. So that was the concept. And it was we want to say Mitech Shalei Lishma Bal Lishma type of moment, possibly. But I think when you do something enough and you do good and you do a lot of good, it just becomes part of who you are and you become a good person.
Nice. Looking back at Lakewood now.
Well, you know what they say. You could take the boy out of Lakewood, but you can't take the Lakewood out of the boy.
That's it. a lot of big companies here in Lakewood. How many do you have a lot of Lakewood staff?
Yes. So we had our main office was in Brooklyn for a bunch of years. And about 3 years ago, I brought the company back into Lakewood. Now our main office is on 101 Chase here in Lakewood. And the reason is because a lot of our staff live here. And the empire of the epicenter of nursing home business is here in Lakewood, literally.
Yeah, it's not noticed in the media. Like everyone out there in the media talking about how everyone here is on HUD. Like there's a huge, industrial park with big companies. It's not recognized. Maybe we could hire Sensible.
Let's go.
There's money here. We work hard. There's companies.
Yes. There's so much work going on here. I mean, look at like how many networks are there. You have so many different media outlets now.
Right.
And there's a need for it. There's a need. I mean, Lakewood News Network is
Premier Lakewood. So is it known in the outside of our community across the United States that like there's a town in New Jersey which is the healthcare capital, or it's just something that we joke about?
People definitely know about it.
That's how much from dominant industry.
Yeah. I'm at shows. I was at a show recently in Atlantic City, finance show, and the people they were talking about. Oh, you're from up the Garden State. Yeah, Lakewood. Yeah, Lakewood. Like people know.
Because for sure, like healthcare events around here, but even further out, there's like just Minyanim and like, Jewish bands and kosher food.
Literally, I was in Washington, D.C. a couple months ago for a wound care show. Nothing, like very random show. There's kosher food and there's Minyan and there's people there. Like it's unbelievable wherever you go.
I think healthcare in particular, they just have a lot of events. Just tons of food and tons of events. Like, the whole industry. Like more so than like I don't know other industries, real estate.
For sure.
Because it's from people involved.
I think it has to do with from people, and I think also people enjoy networking, and there's a lot of vendors in the nursing home space. You have the nursing home owners, operators, administrators, and then you have so many different vendors. I don't think there's any other industry that has as many vendors. And vendors always want to do appreciation for their clients. So when you do an event, you're doing you're appreciating your clients. So I think that's why nursing homes have so much more than any other company, any other industry, because of the vendors.
When you're working at a networking event, trying to grow Sensible, let me hear, let's see some hidden secrets. How does Shimmy J approach a networking event? What's the goal, and how do you accomplish that? Accomplish the most your day at an event?
So I try to, first of all, meet as many people as possible and smile, be nice, put your guard down, let your guard down. When you're at a networking event, it's hard. A lot of people are by nature not, you know, people's people. So they clam up. I try to, like, you know, open up and let anyone who wants to come over and say hello, get to know people and schmooze, you know, just schmooze with whoever you could. Get as many numbers as you can, and then follow up. Follow up is key. Because you're not going to make the sale at the event.
Right.
People have this misconception. When I go to the networking event, I'm going to come back with 10 sales. No. It's called planting seeds. You go to a networking event to plant a seed. I want to target on one guy, plant a seed, get a card, get a number, follow up. Great meeting you. Can we get together? Like something like that. Follow up.
And you can spend the next month, 10 months chasing him.
Yeah. That's yeah. The name of the game. I don't chase.
But you said one on one chase. What do you mean?
Yeah. I think that if you chase a business, obviously you could chase business, but you want to try to make it like you want to let it come to you. You could do things to get it to come to you.
That's where the secret lies.
A lot of the secret lies are you want to let things come to you. You know, if you're pressing too hard, no owner or business person wants to feel like they're, you know, you're desperate. You don't want to make yourself desperate. When you chase, you look desperate. You do it in a way where you're not looking desperate, you're going to get that sale.
When you're training in new marketers, so you said you're going to go into the hospital, meeting with social workers. Now, there's going to be competing marketers from local nursing homes. So what's the trick to win over somebody when everyone there is offering to help the social worker?
That's a great question. I actually did a video about that a while ago, a couple of years back. Your competition is your best friend. It's got to be your best friend. Because one day, you might need them when your nursing home is full. You got to still help your social workers out so you could send it to your competition. And you want your competition to feel like you're not stepping on their toes so they won't step on your toes. So I always believe that you should always treat your competition like part of the team. And it really helps. It works out.
So what goes through a social worker's mind when we're looking to discharge somebody, and like, we have Sensible and we have whatever X, like you have to win her over somehow.
Sure. So, you know, the social worker, you're there to help them out. That's the key. So you want to be able to, you know, say I have options. Part of being, you know, in the Sensible network is we have so many different facilities with different specialties. So as a social worker, when you see a Sensible marketing person, you're like, oh, I could send a vent patient, I could send a dialysis patient, I could send a psych patient, because they have all these different specialties in their thing. We have bariatric patients we could take anybody. And patients on heroin or any drug, we could take anybody.
So without you, a social worker can't discharge somebody to
no,
a facility?
No, they could discharge, but they always
need... What way are you helpful?
So we're helpful by making the process simple. They have the bed ready. We do a handoff. The process is just a lot easier when you're working with us. Making sure the patient has the room ready. There's a welcome package when they get there. We report back to the hospital that the patient's safe and sound in their room. We give over the full VIP treatment that the patients deserve. And we do that seamlessly.
So you have like protocols in place sure. That your markers know they have to do?
Sure, sure. And then if the patient goes back to the hospital, we'll go and visit them. So we have a real robust system, and we'll give them, you know, a teddy bear, get well teddy bear when they're back in the hospital.
They have a budget, marketers, but they could spend on social workers?
There's a legal limit that you're allowed to spend.
Oh, yeah.
And there's an anti-kickback law, so you're not allowed to do up to like a certain dollar amount, and we stay within those guidelines. Everything we do is super, you know, kosher v'yasher.
Yeah, you're not affected. I know the healthcare is very regulated.
Super regulated.
So besides for this, is there any other ways that your company is regulated by all the healthcare rules?
So we're a third party, so we're not billing Medicare.
Right.
So we have no real compliance as far as, you know, being under the Medicare guidelines, but we have to, you know, operate within the CMS guidelines as far as anti-kickback. So you're not allowed to get back, you're not allowed to, you know, pay for a patient to come. It's super, super illegal. And we're super careful about, you know, paying to pay to play. It's super illegal. And we're very careful. People always say, oh, you know, I'm worried about getting audits. I'm worried about this. As long as you do things right, you do things kosher, you have nothing to worry about.
As we're winding down, just we have a couple closing questions. Question number one, is there any myth or misunderstanding about the work you do that you'd like to debunk or clarify? I'd like to say one of these. One is that it's all fun and games from the minute you wake up until the minute you go to sleep. We don't get to really see the hustle in there. So
one myth. That's definitely a myth that we are. It's not a myth. We actually do have fun and games. And I didn't really get into this, and I'll just say it quickly, but we have our tagline called Good Times. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I pushed the good times in our business model is because we're in the nursing home space where things are dreary, things can get really gray. We're dealing with, you know, hospice patients, people that are really sick, and we try to bring a good times and a smile to their faces while we do what we do by helping patients get into the nursing home. So that's definitely a reason why we make it exciting and good times. But 100%, it's a myth. We do a lot of hard work. The teams, what they do day to day is unimaginable. The hustle they do is unbelievable. The care they do and put in dealing with the families, dealing with the patients is unbelievable. And we just don't push that as the, you know, our business model. We try to keep it fun and exciting.
Any other myths?
That's the only one that really that stands out.
If you can give your younger self a piece of advice, what would that be?
Don't change anything.
In what sense? What's sensible?
In sense that, like, I feel like, you know, yeah. People go through life, they go through hardships, they go through challenges, and people say, oh, you know, during the challenge, you feel like your life's over and you feel like you wish things would be different. But as life goes on and you realize that those challenges made you who you are today and gave you that strength, you had to go through that in order to be where you are today. So if, you know, a lot of people say, if I could tell my younger self, I would have said, don't mess up. No, I would tell myself, don't change anything. Do what you did because you are here today because of those situations that you went through.
Is there any hidden talent or hobby that you could share with us? Do you like play the drums or juggle or ski?
I actually love to fish.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. My hidden relaxation is fishing.
So you have time to do that? You go that? You go fishing?
Yeah, I like to fish, and I go fishing every so often. I enjoy it. Yeah.
On a boat? You go like
either one? Lake? Either one. I go down to Point Pleasant, or I'll take a boat out. Yeah. So that's my secret hobby.
Beauty. Any message for the Greater Lakewood community? This is it. So
yeah. My message to the Greater Lakewood community is that keep on being Lakewood people. Don't let people let you down because, oh, you're from Lakewood. Oh, you know, Lakewood's a great place. You know, Reb Aaron started this town, and I think he would be proud of seeing where we are today, growing, so much tzedakah going on. So never change about who you are. Go Lakewood.
Thank you. Thank you so much. There you have it. That is a wrap with this episode as well as the season. If you enjoyed this episode, give it a thumbs up. Don't forget to subscribe. If you haven't listened to other episodes of season 2, now's a perfect time to do just that. If you'd like to know about any sponsorship opportunities for season 3, reach out to us, ourtown@lnnnews.com. And we'll be back at you next season, coming right up. Sit tight. But for now, continue being uniquely you. I can't wait to hear your story someday.